Now, it's my pleasure to introduce to you our speaker for the evening. Her recovery started here a little over 16 years ago. And shortly after that, I came in and I met her. She was in recovery when I got here. She's strong in recovery. It's done well, and she's come a long way this evening to share her strength, hope, and experience, and to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. With that, I give you Yvette C., our speaker for the night.
Hi, my name's Yvette, and I am in the recovery process. Amen. Wow. First of all, I'd like to thank the God of my understanding for allowing me to be here and the committee, Bridgeview Institute. As Bird was saying, I first got introduced to recovery here at Bridgeview. Okay, he told me to tell my story, and I am so nervous. I've been here. My clean date is March 28th, 1995. I have not found it necessary to use anything besides shopping, men, money. But I have not had the desire to use, and I have not used any drugs, alcohol. I even stopped smoking in this process. Okay? Wow. My story. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I don't like what it was like. I don't like that part. That was a very, very painful part. I came from Wilmington, Delaware. My mom and my dad were not married. I have two sisters and two brothers, and I'm the oldest girl. At the time when I was growing up, I didn't understand a lot. All I knew was you did what your mom said, and I seen my dad in and out, and my dad was real abusive with my mom. At a very early age, I remember feeling that abuse. Like, what he would do to her, it was like he was doing it to me. I felt the shame, the guilt. I felt all those feelings at age 8, 9. Like, I always felt like something was wrong with me based on what you was doing or what I was seeing. And I had no one to talk to. My mom moved around a lot, and we had to stay with my grandmother. And I didn't know then, but I know now, that they were sick people, like real, real sick people. I didn't have to go outside to get abused. I got abused in my home. But again, I didn't understand it. I just thought something was wrong with me. I didn't know you were sick. I didn't know these people was hurting. Again, I went inward, and because the way I looked, everybody thought that I wasn't insane. Well, you don't look like you get abused, or you don't look like this. Wow. So I hid behind what y'all thought I looked like. And I ran my life like that. My parents lived in the projects. And my grandmother lived in the upper side of Wilmington, Delaware, upper class. And I had this friend, I remember I was in fifth grade. Her name was Amy Ronzulli. And I wanted to be Amy Ronzulli. So I pretended I was her. I would get up every morning and I would go to her house because her parents was cooking these waffles. Oh my God, I can still remember the scent. And I was like, I hated it, but it was like so homey. So I was like, okay, I knew my house was like crazy. And I would go over Amy's house in the morning so I could get prepared, so I can be prepared to go to school mentally. And her family, her mom was like, hi, Yvette. No, 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 no. I'm like, okay, I want to be Amy Ronzulli. So from that day, I always acted like I was somebody else because I didn't like who I was. I didn't like coming from the parents that I came from. I didn't like seeing my sisters and my brothers being abused. I didn't like any of that. I didn't like seeing my mom being abused. As I was saying, my mom moved around a lot. So we ended up, when I was about 15, we ended up moving to Augusta, Georgia. Because my grandmother moved to Augusta, then my aunt moved to Augusta. So everybody, we like migrate. We're like, I hope I don't offend anyone. We're like gypsies. We move all the time. We go everywhere. So we moved to Augusta, Georgia, And again, I was with me. I thought it would be different. I was very promiscuous at an early age. I started because guys gave me attention, right? They gave me attention I wanted. Everybody thought I was cute. So I had like a really bad attitude. And I hated females because I just hated everybody. And not just females, I hated everybody. And, but I couldn't put it into words. I couldn't express what I was feeling. So I just knew hate. I hated everybody, the way you look, what you had. I hated everything, and most of all, I hated me. Because I couldn't understand why what I had to go through so much at a very early age. How come we couldn't have money? How come we couldn't do this? Everybody say I look like I'm rich, right? Because I can put on clothes, right? And I couldn't put on jewelry because I didn't have jewelry. But I just had this look like they thought I was something. So I bought into that. But when I came home, they reminded me that you're nothing. You don't have nothing. You live in a project. Your mom is with your dad, and he beat her up, and he on dope. I didn't know my dad was a drug addict at the time. I didn't know that. So I'm 15, don't know what's going on around me, thinking that I'm grown, because my mother used to leave me home all the time with my sisters and my brothers. And my mom said, I'd rather for you to smoke weed at the house than go outside and smoke. Wow. Yo, my mom said it's cool to smoke at the house. I had a lot of friends. I had a lot of friends. Boy, did I have a lot of friends. Even like the most popular girls, they start saying, Yvette, come hang out with us. I was like, cool. I didn't know. I had no clue, y'all. Wow, how clueless was I. So that's what it was like. And I started with the weed thing, and then it escalated. I got pregnant at 17. And I didn't like do any, like I seen pills and stuff, but that wasn't a thing. I just smoked a little weed. I got pregnant at 17, had my son, and I went back. When I found out I was pregnant, okay, first of all, when my mom moved around, she just like did a whole bunch of crazy stuff. And when we moved to Augusta, my mom finally found a husband. He was military, because Augusta, Georgia is Fort Gordon, so the military men are there. And I didn't know she was searching, but she found a husband. And all this time prior to her finding a husband, I was running the house because my mother was never there. Well, one day my mom come home and she says, look, guys, this is your new dad. I'm like, okay, that's your man, that's whatever, but he ain't my dad. So she commenced rapidly to change my way of life to him. So of course I bucked, and I didn't know I was bucking. I just knew, I don't even listen to you. I'ma listen to him. Where they do that at, right? So, of course, we made her life a living hell because she was trying to get herself together, and we were so used to just doing what we wanted to do. Like, I'm the mom, and she was just a visitor. At 15, 16, 17, I'm paying the bills, not my mother. She'll give me the little money. Oh, I hated that life. Okay. Whew. Broken. I really, really don't like that because it hurts so bad to like, I know people today that they're wealthy, they come from really good families. Now they're addicts and they're dope fiends and they all that, but that was like a real embarrassing part. Like when I was growing up, I always felt the shame. So shame is a big part of my story and pretending. Oh my goodness. I used to lie. I used to say I was a nurse. I was everything but who I was. I was a nurse's aide, but I tell you I'm a nurse. I used to just lie because I didn't know who I was. So my mom brought this man in. He wanted us to follow him, and I was like, yeah, okay, right. We bucked her at first, but my mom, she did the best she could. So, you know, eventually we fell in line with her because back then my mother could whoop you. And they wouldn't call 911. I didn't even know nothing about 911 back then. And, you know, she'll beat you behind at 15, 16, 17. She ain't care. And, you know, you were scared of her. So we fell in line eventually. And we were going to be stationed from Fort Gordon, Georgia to somewhere else. So my mom said, I need you guys to go to stay with your grandmother till we get housing in Fort Detrick, Maryland. When I got to Wilmington, I found out I was pregnant. That's when I found out I was pregnant with my son. And I called his father, and he was like, oh, come to Connecticut with me. We'll live happily ever after. Fantasy land. Wow. Of course, what I did, I told my grandmother, because I was trying to do right. I told my grandmother, I said, he wants to take care of me and the baby. I'm going to move to Hartford, Connecticut. And she said, now this is the same lady that used to abuse us. She said, oh, she called me Betsy, because my nickname is Betsy, and I hate that name. She said, Betsy, don't go. Now, this is the same woman that did not feed us, she used to whoop us, and she didn't like us. And she told me, do not go. Yeah, okay. Of course, I ran away at 17, pregnant. And that's where it really began. I got abused by this man, just like my dad used to do my mom. And then eventually I left him. And by this time, I'm only 18. Right, so I finally leave him, and I go back with my parents. Now they're my parents. I go back and live with them, and my dad, being military, he said, you need to go into the military. So I'm desperate. Sure, I'll go. I'll do whatever. What you want me to do? Till I try to take that PT test. I couldn't do it. I didn't want you telling me. They yelling at you. Do this. Go over here. Yeah, right, you do this and you go over there. Little do you know, I didn't make the military. I couldn't take them telling me what to do. They was yelling too loud. Came back with my parents, and my dad was like, well, you're gonna get, they love my son, they wanted to take him. But this higher power, man, he had a plan for me when I didn't know. So I left my parents and I moved on my own, and that's when I started using the harder drugs, right? And when I started smoking, instantly, my life went down. Like, at 19, I started smoking. I had met a military guy first, which is my husband of 21 years, and he married me. And he said he was going to take me away, and we were going to live happily ever after, because I have fantasies, and I live in fantasy land. Well, I married this man, and he did. He did exactly what he said. He took me with him. I got pregnant with my daughter, and I was living the military wife role. I was such a liar. And I started using when he went to the first Gulf War. And, wow, I went down real quick. And when he came home, you know, I get everything together. Like the book said, you get your life all together when it come back. And, you know, I try to stop using, but I couldn't. I couldn't. So I would steal his wallet. I used to steal the money out the wallet first. And then he'll be like, what the? So I start stealing the whole wallet. You know, because he gonna know you took. This was my bright idea. Instead of taking the money out, just take the whole wallet. And at first, he bought into it until he had to keep going down to DMV to get new driver license and stuff. He's like, Yvette. I was like, what? I ain't do nothing. Liar. Man, that was so horrible, taking this man's wallet. Wow. I did it. Right? So my disease progressed, and as my disease progressed, I got more shame because I was doing things that I was like doing anything, right? Because at first I had the money. I used to take all the money from the house, and I don't know how we never lost our house, how we never lost like cars and stuff. Maybe because he took my name off the joint account. I think that's what happened. He took my name off the joint account, but I kept a job. And I will work these jobs until payday come. And if you gave my check before the end of my shift, you wasn't gonna see me again. And I did that for, like, I think I probably lost about 7 or 8 jobs like that. Still, I couldn't identify that I had a problem. It was my boss. They were just getting on my nerves. No, it was my husband. My husband was older than I am. He trying to tell me what to do. You know, it was never me. I knew deep down it was me, but I just didn't know how to stop. And I didn't know how to be honest, and I didn't know how to ask for help. So I kept on, and it was my plan, because my plan was, once we move from, because we were stationed at Fort Stewart, Georgia, and once we move, I can get myself together. Well, we moved from Fort Stewart, Georgia to Atlanta, and my husband had got out of the military, and I came here, I didn't know nobody, so I didn't use. And one day, I'm at my mom's house, and this is the same person who said, smoke at the house. She said, I need some weed. I was like, I'll go with y'all a little, you know. We went down to this place called Carver Home. I don't think it's there anymore. But me and my brother went down there in a little car, you know. And we was like, do you have any drugs? And the guy said, yeah, I'll come back here. This man took me behind the building. My brother's in the car because we was going to get weed, but I was going to get crack. And I couldn't tell them I was going to go buy crack. So the dude told me, he said, come behind the building. I just walked behind that building, and he pulled out a gun. And he said, give me your money. I only had $20. You want that? I was so scared. But all I was worried about at that time was him taking my money, and I couldn't buy any dope. Like, are you serious? You about to take my money? He took my money. He didn't shoot me. I never been shot. And I walked back to the car real as calm as I could, and I told my brother, I said, let's go. He was like, what's the matter? I said, please, let's go. And we left there, and then I proceeded to tell him that I got robbed. And I never told him I got robbed because I was trying to buy crack and not weed. So we got to the house, and he was like, what happened? I was like, well, I got robbed or whatever. But it didn't stop me. I kept using. I just knew I wasn't going to go to Carver Homes and get no dope because they rob you down there. Another thing was a difference in my life was I smoked, like, in my bathroom. I got high in my bathroom. I didn't get high in the streets. I didn't go over people's houses. I would lock myself up in the bathroom. Wow. And, I'm a very neat person. So my husband was still taking care of me on the outside, and I would get my hair done. I would tell him, I need money to get my hair done. Can you please just give me money and get my hair done? And he would give me money to get my hair done. And I don't know how I had extra money, but I would get my hair done and then go find some drugs and hurry up to get home to smoke it. Now, I just got my hair done. And for black people, you can't get your hair done and get in the shower. That doesn't work. You can't do that. I would get my hair done, go in the bathroom, and turn that water on. They make you think I'm getting my, getting a shower. Hair fall. It was so horrible. I was like retarded. Excuse me. I was mentally challenged. So it's just using became like a full-time job. I couldn't keep a job because my stomach, when payday come, my stomach be like, you could just get one. I would be like, okay, I get paid Friday, right? Every Friday I would use. So on Saturday or Sunday, I would vow, I am never going to use again. I'm never, ever, ever. My husband was like, I'm never going to do it. Please, I'm never going to do it again. And Monday, I'm never going to do it again. I kept telling myself, I'm never going to do it again. Tuesday, I don't think I'm going to use. Wednesday, I wasn't saying it as much. Thursday, I couldn't wait till Friday. When Friday came, it was not even a thought of not using. That was just what was going to happen. I had no control of not using at that point. At the end of the road of my using, I couldn't keep it up anymore. I couldn't keep up the charade. I couldn't take care of my kids. And I remember I had went down to my last job, because I would always quit jobs, was at a grocery store. And I remember saying all I wanted to do was be able to take that paycheck home so I can buy my kids some food. And I remember seeing this lady at my register. She had on a nice little bag. She had a little kid in her cart. and she was buying her groceries. And I remember praying right there, Lord, if you just let me get home with this paycheck, I'm never going to use again. I'm going to take this paycheck home, and I'm not going to use. That paycheck never made it home. So I didn't believe that, because I was praying. I said, God, please help me. Don't let me use. And that paycheck didn't make it home. And I just didn't know what else to do. So they had these commercials back then, and they said, if you don't get help here, get help somewhere. And I remember sitting on the bed, and my mom had moved in because my life had got so unmanageable at that time. My mom had moved in to take care of my kids and my husband because I couldn't take care of anybody. I ran around South Cobb Drive, up and down South Cobb Drive, up and down South Cobb Drive. I used to use my ATM, like, go, wow. One time they just took my card. I couldn't stop, man. I couldn't stop. So this one day, I was just, like, so tired. I was sitting on my bed, and my mom was there. Well, my husband had came. I had stayed out all night. And my husband came in there, and he said, girlfriend, you look bad. You look bad. It was my response to him. But I couldn't fight anymore. I knew. I don't even remember looking at myself in the mirror during those days. And I went in there to my mom, well, my son at the time, he came in, and he was like, Mom, my eye. And his eye was, like, real big. I don't know what happened to him. And I went in there, and I told my mother, I was like, I can't do this. Please help me. My mom told me, go in there and pray.
Pray?
Pray. Don't you know I be praying all the time? My mom said, go in there and pray. I remember going back in my bedroom, and I remember praying, saying, God, please help me, please help me, please help me, please help me. And I think I skipped this part. Back in 93, I came through Ridgeview because I began to lose jobs. So I came to Ridgeview to get my husband to believe that I'm not as bad as I was. So I came to Ridgeview, and I stayed here maybe 5 days. And it was Thanksgiving weekend. And I remember they let me go home to be with my family. But before I left, they had these things back then called hot seats. I don't know if they still have them now, but they put you on a hot seat. I didn't like hot seats. You wasn't putting me on a hot seat. And I really wasn't listening. I just came here so y'all could show me how to use successfully, right? Because I just wanted the pain to stop. I just wanted to stop spending all my money. Because I liked getting high at that time. It was, even though it was horrible, it was still, it wasn't that bad. So the man told me, he said, get off the nail. And I looked at the seat. Ain't no nail here. I didn't understand what that nail was at the time. And then he also said to me, they said that I wasn't going to make it. They said, you're going to use. And I was like, I just didn't like him, didn't like Ridgeview, didn't like nobody, so I don't care. But I went home, and my husband told me, go to the store, because my husband, he always wants things to be perfect, right? He said, go to the store, get Thanksgiving dinner, and get me a six-pack of beer. So I could do that. Give me the money. Then he gave me extra money. That night, I called my little dope boy, and I was like, can you bring me some? Now, my hand's shaking like this. I said, can you bring me something? And he was like, yeah. I don't even remember getting high that night because I was so nervous that somebody was going to bust in the door. But I tried. I didn't go back to Ridgeview after that holiday, and I started using again. So by the time I came back to Ridgeview, March 27th, 1995, I had started hearing stuff in my ceiling. So I was like, man, I'm crazy. I'll be getting high thinking the FBI is in my living room. I really believed that. I believed that somebody was up there looking at me getting high. I was so crazy. I was like, oh, my God, they're going to catch me. I'm going to go to jail. And I would hear these little things up there, and I'd be getting high looking. Psycho. But I believed it. I mean, wow. I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one who did that. It was so retarded. I mean, mentally challenged. So by the time I came back to Ridgewood, when my mom told me, go pray, the little voice said, go to Ridgeview. Because I had came here one time before. I didn't believe what y'all said was working because I used again. But that little voice said, go to Ridgeview. So I told my mom. Now, I don't like getting into the drug log and all that kind of stuff, but I used to smoke out of a can. I don't know if anybody can identify with that. I wasn't one of them good people that had all the equipment and stuff. I just didn't know how to do that. So I was like a real bad addict, right? So my sister, she had been using at the time too. And when I would go with her, I would start crying. Go home, get away from me, you're always crying. Because I always knew that I wasn't supposed to be doing that. I would get really emotional and I'll start crying. My sister would be like, go home, you can't hang with me. Well, my sister has been in jail now for about 10 years and because of drug-related crime, right? So I wasn't supposed to hang out with her. So I came to I got on a bus. And on Duck Road, I used to live in them little apartments over there, and I got on a bus, and I rode the bus to Ridgeview, and I just cried, and I cried. Now, my husband's at work. Now, I had to call him when I got here, and I called him. I said, I'm at Ridgeview. He said, go home and cook dinner. I said, I'm at Ridgeview. Okay, well, go home and cook. I had to hang up, and I couldn't talk to him for my first 4 or 5 days because I just couldn't talk to him. I was just crying. I was like a basket case. I was thoroughly whooped by that time. I didn't know it at the time, but I just cried. When I came to Ridgeview and sat in on pods, I just cried. I was just so tired of me whooping me. I was so tired of using but couldn't stop using. I was so tired of like feeling like a nothing, because like I could dress up the kids and the house. Well, at this point I couldn't dress up nothing. I started hiding. My family couldn't come over my house anymore. I couldn't go to parties because all I wanted to do was get high. And if I did go to a party, so it'll start out with a little drink, but by the end of the night I'm MIA. They like, where Yvette? I know where she is. She gone. I'm gone. And I came to Ridgeview, so that was what happened. Came to Ridgeview, and I just sat here and I cried, man. I didn't know what else to do, so I just cried. And my husband, he tried to come and talk to me. I couldn't talk to him, because that was an easy one. I could do that. I could get over on that. And my husband was military, and this is Ridgeview Institute, and I heard people say, they're going to make you leave because your insurance isn't good enough. So I was like, that's all they wanted, because the first time, that's what I thought. The treatment facility just wanted my insurance money. Now, here I am, the dope fiend, but Ridgeview wanted my insurance money. But it took me a while to get to that. So Ridgeview said, and a doctor here, he said, I have another place that you can go to if you're willing to go. And I said, yeah, I'm willing to go. And that night I had this dream that I was going to an insane asylum. And it was a white building. And it was like crazy, right? And I remember this white building. It was like everything was like sterile white in there, like whatever. So in the morning, the doctor said that he was getting me a taxi to drive me around a corner. I didn't know it was around a corner. It was a treatment facility at that time called Bronner. And I remember, I had never been there. Now, I've been up and down South Cobb Drive. I had never seen Ridgeview, and I had never seen Bronner. So when I got in the taxi, I thought I was going for a long ride. Well, when I pulled up the Bronner, it was a white building. I was like, oh, hell no, right? And then a guy ran out screaming. Oh, my God, my dream is coming true, right? I can't go in there, but where else am I gonna go, right? So I took my little scary butt up the stairs, and I went in, and they gave me a roommate. And she was an older white lady. And I'm very judgmental, right? She old, right? She used drugs or whatever. I'm sizing her up. So then they put me out with population or whatever, and it was this people that look so different than me, and I'm looking at them like, now here I am, psycho, crazy, dopey, but I'm judging you, right? And this man, he was a black guy, and his hair was like matted, and I was like, I'm not as bad, because I stayed out there because I wasn't as bad as y'all. I wasn't as bad as y'all. I still had my husband, I still had money, I had stuff. You know, I just had a little drug problem. And this man's head was matted, and he was just talking about recovery. And I'm like, so I go back into the room. So, you know, I try to befriend the lady, and I'm still like, I can't deal with this lady. She old, right? And I went in there, and I started talking about him. And she said to me, she said, sweetie, be careful who you talk about. That might be the person to save your life. What is she talking about? She, oh, give me some wisdom stuff, right? Oh, man. That man saved my life. The next day, he had a haircut. He looked so different. I was like, get a haircut, do all that. And he, oh, he was so wonderful. He was so kind to me. And I was talking about him yesterday. And I don't know how I became his friend. We just, I do not know how it happened. It just happened. I stayed there, and things began to change, right? Now, I'm in treatment. Now, back at the house, back at the ranch, I have a husband. We got four kids, right? Our two, and then he was married before, so we got, and her mom, their mom went on drugs. So we had the three girls and my son. I did not want to go back to the ranch. Dealing with them, no ma'am. So I was like comfortable with Bronner because I was able to share about me being molested by my uncle, and then actually doing it with him voluntarily after a while. And I kept that in for so long that the shame was killing me, right? And I told this lady at Bronner, and she just looked at me and said, oh, but she was a therapist, so what else I think she was going to say? I wasn't going to tell y'all. But I told her, and that's all I needed to tell at the time, because it freed me. At that point, I had a moment of freedom. Like the shame was gone, right? Wow, I still have chills because I remember that day. I remember crying to her and telling her what happened to me. And that was the first time I told anybody. And, I just went back and just did whatever they said. They said, Yvette, you need to go to this meeting over here. Yvette went to this meeting over here. They said, Yvette, you need to sit over here. Yvette sat over there. Because I had hope at that moment. When I got some freedom and something felt different on the inside, I was like, what is this? Because I never had that feeling before. And I liked it. Whatever she told me to do, whoever told me to do, I started doing whatever y'all say to do. And I remember I had this... Okay, so I start following instructions is what we call it. And my life began to feel better. I began to feel better. Things were still chaotic. My household over there with them kids and that man was still over there. But I'm in Bronner, so I'm safe, right? They say, you get to go home for the weekend. Huh? Home? Oh, my God. I went to the house, and the kids were running around. And the husband was like, what about me? And I'm like, can I please go back to Bronner? I'm calling somebody. I didn't have a sponsor at the time because I'm in treatment. And I was just calling Bronner, can I come back early? Is there any way I can get back early? Right? But I had to stay and endure it. I didn't know what I was doing. I just did the next thing, right? And it was painful because I used in my house. Y'all said don't go around old playmates and playmates. Well, my house at the time was that, right? And I still had paraphernalia in that house that I didn't tell anybody where it was. So when I got there, that's one of the first things I did. I told my husband, it's some cans over there. He was like, what the? I was like, it's just some cans. Just get it for me. So I came back. I survived that weekend, and I came back, and I just did what they told me to do, right? And my life, I began to feel better. So they let me go home for good. I finished Bronner, and they let me go home. But they said, when you leave here, you need to go to a meeting, and you need to get a sponsor. And because the outside world was so unfamiliar to me without drugs, I'm going to tell you how God set it up. I used to live in these apartments, and the day I got home, because see, I guess people been carrying these books for a long time. We just didn't notice it. I used to jump out of my window. I lived on the bottom floor, so don't get nervous. Because I couldn't go out the front door because my husband would hear it. So I would jump out of the patio, right? Can't hear me. Crazy. So when I got home, I couldn't sleep at night either. I couldn't sleep because I used to get high in the middle of the night. So I couldn't sleep. And I remember getting up, and I used to steal his wallet all the time. So I had a wallet. I had a husband, and here I am straight out of Bronner. What do I do? I couldn't sleep well, so they taught me here to pray, right? And they used to give me these meditation tapes. So I didn't really buy into the meditation piece at the beginning. So I remember sitting on my patio, because I remember praying, and I went outside and I sat on my patio. It had to be about 6 o'clock in the morning. And I sat there and I prayed, and the sun came up, and then this man came from downstairs, and he had this book. And I said, where are you going? And he said, I'm going to a meeting. I said, can I go with you? And he told me I could go with him. Now, I had someone right on top of me in recovery. Now, this man been up there the whole time, and I never seen him. But I seen this book. And I went with them every meeting that they went to. And my husband used to say, you go to too many meetings. And I would say, I really need them, right? So at my beginning of my early stages of recovery, whatever y'all told me to do, I would do, right? And whatever y'all told me to say, I say it. I remember going to, we used to have a meeting on Windy Hill Road. And we used to meet over there, and Richard and it was a whole bunch of other guys, man, they helped save my life, right? So I went home, and no, when I went home and I said something to my husband said, they brainwashing you. So I took it back to the meeting. I said, my husband said, y'all brainwashing me. And they said, tell your husband you need a brainwashing. Wow. And I told my husband I needed a brainwashing, right? But I kept coming. It was hard. It was so hard to get clean. It was real hard because everything that I had got used to doing had to stop, right? And I had to start, like, I didn't know how to live. I thought I knew how to live. I had been married at that time for about 10 years. As I said, we had 4 kids. So what do you mean I don't know how to live? But, man, I bought into the program. I bought into, because see, when I got 30 days clean, I could not believe it. Are you serious? Then I got 60 days clean. Woohoo, right? 90 days. And it was this one man walked around here. I don't know if he's here anymore. His name is Glenn. And again, I tell you, I judge people. So God put the most funny people in my life, right? I used to think Glenn was like mentally challenged because he was like, dude, what's up, right? I'm like, I know he's getting high. I know he's getting high. So let me hang out with him to see how he can come to meetings and get high. So one day we went, like back in those days, we hung out. We went to meetings, right? And we went to meetings all over Atlanta. And Glenn came and picked me up, and he took me to this meeting way somewhere. While we was driving, he's like, dude, you want to get high? I said, I knew it. I knew he got high. I was like, yeah. Oh, my God. When he got finished with me, he told everybody, man, she thought I was serious about wanting to get high. I was embarrassed, but I didn't use, and I did not stop coming. And me and Glenn was like this, right? But I thought he was serious. He's like, dude, you want to get high? And he, like, would shake a little bit. So, because I'm telling you, I used to judge him. I didn't know that he had fell down an elevator shaft and survived and stayed clean and all that. Because I would judge you just by the way you look. Because that's what I was taught. You judge a book by the cover. Stay clean. Was embarrassed. Got my first year. I was celebrating at Windy Hill, and my husband came. And back then, they had some dudes in recovery who was fine. Oh, my God. I was like, ah! Right? But they taught me here that you can't be a hoe. Right? So they said, you can't do that, Yvette. So I didn't do it. Oh, first, my sponsor. I met my sponsor here. And she was an older lady. And so I thought that was my mom, because again, I never had my mom. So I was like, okay, this is my mom, right? And she broke my heart. She said, I'm not your mother. I'm not your friend. I was like, well, what are you? She said, I'm your sponsor. And this lady has loved me since that day till this day, right? But anyway, getting back to my first year clean, them brothers was fine. And I thought they liked me, right? So my husband came to my anniversary, and one of the dudes came over to my husband after that meeting and said, what would you do if she went back out and used? Why the hell are you putting anything in his head? He said, my husband didn't say anything. He said, make sure you lock the door. Don't let her back in. Why did you tell him that? He was not going to think that way. I didn't like him after that. The dude, but I stayed clean, right? And me and him are still, actually, he was here when I got here, and he has relapsed since, but he's coming back. But the reason why I'm saying that is because when I first got here, I didn't think people stayed clean. I thought they was lying, because I would see people with red eyes. They tell me they got 5 years. Yeah, right, because 5 years was a long time when you got 30 days. And I was like, 5 years, I know they get, and then they was laughing, and they was having fun. They high. Don't nobody laugh and have fun, not high. So I watched them, and then I started hanging out with them, and I seen that it was for real. Like, you can be happy, joyous, and free if you want to, up in this piece, but there's some things that you're gonna have to do. And the first thing I had to do was stop lying. I had to get honest. Right, I had to stop lying. The lies had to go. Now, they told me in the other fellowship that the mask had to go, but I wasn't ready for the mask to go yet, because when you take the mask off, who are you, right? But I stopped lying, and as I stopped lying and start working the steps, man, my life began to change, right? This higher power was just like, in the literature, it talks about seeing the evidence. Like, I began to see evidence that this power, not just saying that first year, it was like a whole bunch of stuff started happening. Like, I used to be mean to my stepkids. And when I got to the program and I started working the steps, like, I used to want to beat them. You know, my mom beat me, so I want to beat you. And I was about to whoop this little girl one day, and the speaker fell on my head. I was like, God, are you serious? Right? I didn't whoop her, because, woo, that thing hurt my head. But for me, that was a sign that don't put your hands on that child. You know what I'm saying? Don't do that. And, wow, so I stayed clean through all that. And, wow, I was working the steps, and my sister, who I talked about before, she began to, like, populate Cobb County. She got, like, 7 kids. And she was. Now, this is my sister, and I love her dearly. I love my sister dearly. But she began to populate Cobb County, and she kept using. She just kept using. So I have an idea. I have a wonderful program. I want her to get it. So I got an apartment in my name for her. I became her proxy, all this kind of stuff to get her life together. In the process of me trying to get her life together, my life went to crap. Because see, I can't carry the individual. I can just carry the message. That's what I learned. Through trial and error, my sister still, she's not using a day because she's in jail, but she hasn't been able to stay clean. She just haven't gotten a program. My mom is still over there using, but I haven't. I wanted my family to get this, but this is something that the individual has to get. You have to do it for yourself. Like, I knew my husband wanted me. I asked him the other day, I said, was you praying for me? He looked at me like, girl, what is wrong with you? Because sometimes I like to think back on things because I remember not being able to use. And I have 16 years and some change of not using. And sometimes I come in a meeting, I try to get the big head because I got 16 years. How much clean time you got? How much clean time you got, right? But the God of my understanding reminds me that is not you. I didn't do this. All I did was not use consistently for 16 years. All this other stuff, this higher power, he gave me the ability to do it, right? What happened? I told you I used to have these little jobs. And when I got clean, I got a job offer for the World Trade Center. And I worked there. And I left there I quit my job June 2001. And I was in World Trade Center 2. And my daughter, she wasn't adjusting well to New York. And so I was like, okay, we'll just go back home. Because, like, what I learned here is, like, my kids are real important to me. They like real, real important. And because I wasn't used to a really good job like that anyway, it really didn't bother me because a dope fiend like me, I need to say this because this was so powerful. Now, I came from Atlanta, and I used to work at a grocery store. My last job was a grocery store. And then I made head about 5 years, and they gave me a job. They offered me a job at the Trade Center. I didn't know, like, it was a big deal. I'm like, okay, cool. But I'm working with the associates. They're starting out with like $100,000. Again, it wasn't a big deal to me because it was like, okay, whoever. But they gave me an apartment in Battery Park. And I didn't have to pay any rent. And it was like, I didn't know it was like $3,500. But the hit for me was I lived in Battery Park. I would walk across the street to my office job. And I would walk so slow because I was in amazement. I was amazed. Do y'all know I'm a dope fiend? Do y'all know I smoke dope in cans? And they were asking me my opinion. Are you serious? And at first it was real hard for me because I used to cry because I was scared because I didn't think that my opinion meant anything. And we sat in the boardroom. Oh, my God, I was just like, I remember sitting there looking out this window saying, I'm a dope fiend. They do not know who they talking to. I smoke crack, y'all, right? Oh, my goodness, right? But let me tell you what God did. There's a meeting there, an AA meeting, all over New York. They are wonderful people. And, oh, my God, he just continued to keep me surrounded. We had a meeting 12 o'clock every day, and every day I would tell everybody, bye, I'll be back, and I would go to this meeting and get my food and come back, and I'm like, where's she going? She come back different. Every time she come back happy. Honey, you just don't know this head up here was thinking craziness, and it was a meeting right across at the World Trade Center 1 on the 104th floor, and we had a meeting every day at 12 o'clock. Wow, thank you, God. They have a meeting in the World Trade Center, right? We have meetings at Jones Beach. And when I first moved to New York, I really didn't get connected. I'm not going to say I didn't get connected because what they taught me was no matter where you live, get connected. So I don't care where I go, I'm going to a meeting. After 16 years, I still go to meetings. I can't do it no other way. When I stop going to meetings, my twin come out, and she real, real special. That girl will tell me, I don't need y'all. Y'all don't look like me. Y'all don't know anything about me. Go and get you one. Then I had to tell that little heifer to sit down somewhere. Because you're not finna trick me, because it's a trick. See, that same mind that told me you could get one, be the same mind once I use, say, why you do that? That was so damn dumb. It be the same mind. I just learned that recently, you guys. Because, like, I learned not to use, but this other stuff, the trickery part, because, like, I don't use, so, oh, man. This is a journey. So they told me when I first got here, they said, fasten up your seatbelt, because you're in for the ride of your life. That's a stupid slogan. What are you saying? Fasten your seatbelt. You're in the ride for your life. This thing does work one day at a time. It really do work. It changed this dope fiend. I'm still a work in progress. Honey, let me tell you, I'm still special. Real, real special. But the issue that I'm working on today is I'm trying to grow up. Like, the little girl is trying to grow up. Because I got my twin, she like 7. She really is. And when issues come up, she show up. She said, I got it, Yvette, don't worry about it. So I start kicking, screaming, yelling, and I'm going to take my toys and I'm going to go home. That's the way I deal with situations. Until I realize that little girl, she just scared, right? She needs to grow up, right? So today what I do is, when I be hit with something, my little girl want to be like, right? I tell her, check this out, calm down. Right, calm down, I got you. I'm not gonna let nobody hurt you because I told you I was broken. I came in here hurt, messed up. So I think the first thing y'all finna do is y'all gonna hurt me. So I'm not finna love you. Are you serious? Love what? Who love who? I like you a lot, but don't trust me. I don't think so. But now I understand that I can love someone, and I don't have to be afraid that you hurt me, because if you do, guess what? It's your loss. Why do I need to stay in bondage? I did not know what it meant that I was in a self-imposed prison. I was doing everything based on what you do. Whatever you did to me, or whatever you, however, I want you to make me, I would do anything for you to make me feel a different way, or make me feel better about myself, even the things that I really don't like to do, just so you could like me. Okay. I still do that a lot, but I'm getting better with it. Because it's a process, man. It's like I walked in here that I thought the most obvious symptom was the drug use. I thought I just had a drug problem. Well, I haven't used drugs in over 16 years, so what's the problem now? What's the problem now? You don't do dope. Now what? Right? I'm so grateful to be, I'm so grateful for Ridgeview for guiding me, setting the stage for this life. Because some days I can't ever say I want to use again. Some days I do want to drink. I do, because like, it don't come to me with the crack no more. It says, you've never had that Ciroc. You can get some. Like, I've never tasted Ciroc, right? So people be like, because, like, I could go to different places now. You know, I can go to social events and stuff, and they be drinking, and my little girl or my little disease be like, get you some. You can get one. Ain't nobody in NA from here or AA. They not here, because everybody drunk, right? So, you know, they not here. And then I play that tape all the way to the end, and I lose everything. See, if I use, I'm not going to use nicely. Ain't nothing nice about me taking a drink. I'm going to take that thing all the way back down to South Cobb Drive. I'm convinced that's what I would do, even though my disease will tell me, no, you won't. You can get one. I can't. If I get one, game over. Restart button. And my sponsor always tell me, I have a really wonderful sponsor. People in here know her. She's been my sponsor since I got here. And I'm gonna share this, it's almost, my time is almost up. I live in Augusta, and I told her, well, I was like, you know, I'm speaking. She said, I'm the one that set it up. I was like, okay. So I was fortunate enough today to spend the whole day with this lady. I'm talking about, like, I don't stay with anybody 20 minutes. I don't stay with my mama house 20 minutes. And I drive from Augusta. I get over there, I gotta go. I don't stay at anybody's house. So I went to her house today, and I had these preconceived ideas. I said, I'm gonna be out of her house by 12 o'clock. And that was a long time, because I got there at 8. That was a long time for me, because I ain't finna stay at your house for all them hours. You gonna get on my nerves, right? So, man, I have a grandbaby. There you go, right there. He bad, but he's so smart. He is so smart. And he has a little sister, and I had her for the first time. And I went over her house. She reminded me that she always tell me, leave Yvette alone. Because I always think, I'm not going to do this right. This is not going to happen. Why? She says, leave Yvette alone. There is absolutely nothing wrong with you. Because, see, I'm like a perfectionist. I don't know. I might be the only perfectionist in here. If you come in my house, please take your shoes off. I do not care who you are. And my baby, I'm getting better because everything has to be neat. I think I'm compulsive and obsessive, too. But I've gotten better with it. But being in her house today, she's totally opposite. Everything is everywhere. And I was like, I'm going to freak out, right? Everything was everywhere, but she had so much peace in her house. I stayed over there from 8 o'clock this morning until 5 o'clock this evening. And all I wanted to say was, why couldn't you be my mother? Why? But she wasn't supposed to be my mother. Right, I'm so grateful that this process of recovery, I have a woman in my life that loves me regardless of what I do. And she said this thing to me today. She said, are you happy with the young fella you're with now? It's like, why is she talking to me about him? I didn't come over here for that. And I was like, yeah. So she says, are you satisfied with your living condition? What you mean? Am I satisfied? I'm straight. You know, I'm good. My kid's grown. I live alone. What? And then I said, no, because the man in my life, we have two different lifestyles, right? And I have a control issue, and you need to do it the way I want you to do it. So a lot of times, I trip. Anybody know what trip mean? Bug out? And I make things bigger because it's unacceptable to me, right? So she said, I've told you these stories. She was telling me her story again, and I was surprised. I was like, wow, that's my story. She said, I've told you this many times. You've never listened, but today you hear. And I was like, she always do that to me. She cuss me out nicely, right? And she don't use any curse words. She just make you look at stuff. So I've been having obsession with my cell phone, right? She didn't know that. I live in Augusta. She does not live around me. She said to me today, you're on phone restriction. Like, how the hell she know that? I really need, because my phone is like dope. And they smart too, and they do everything. So, whoa. So I was like, are you serious? Okay, I'll do that because I want to get better because that phone, man, if you ain't calling me right back, I'm calling you. It's like I'm doing dope again. That phone is real, real addictive. She said, you're on phone restriction. I was like, thank you, because I need help. Like, sometimes I can't get myself right. So I'm on phone restriction. So I'm like, what does that actually mean? Does that mean, like, if you call me, can I call you back? She said, no. Only way you call them back, if they say they need to talk, just look at the message and say, mm-hmm, okay. Unless they say they need to talk to you, don't call them back. Because you'll call me with something. These text messages mean one thing. You will say it, and then I'm going to take it another way. What do you mean by that? Get off the phone. Don't talk to nobody, because I'm real codependent. That's what I am. I'm codependent. So being in her house today, she told me that, and I got some relief from me. Get off the phone, because I want to fix you. I want to do everything for you. When your car breaks, I want to fix it. If you need money and you're not paying your bills, I want to pay it, you know, because you're telling me. You didn't ask me, but you told me. like my car broke. So my head says, she's asking you to fix her car. I have issues. So the process works, even though I just gave y'all some scenarios where I'm still special. Is it time we go yet? Oh, so to wrap it up is, I'm a dope fiend, learning to live one day at a time. My sponsor taught me to be kind and loving to people because it works for me. It really does, because it leaves me less stressful. They taught me some principles in here, because when I got here, I had none. I had some. They were probably just pushed way down, you know, because my mom said smoke is okay. She was just sick, man. It says in the big book, too, it says, perhaps we were harmed by sick people. When I read that, it was like, wow, right? She did the best she can. She did the best she could. And, man, I just don't use one day at a time. I don't try to kill myself anymore, like with drugs. But the living thing, I still haven't gotten it 100%. That's why I keep coming, because it's painful sometimes, because things don't go my way. And, man, I'm just grateful for being in this process, and he chose me. Because they say we're chosen in here. Like, he chose me. My sister, me and her both was right together. She's still using, I'm not. My mom, we right together. She's still using, I'm not. It's nothing I've done. I'm grateful. I am so grateful. Because it was hard as hell, continue using. Thank y'all for letting me share.
Okay. Yvette, thank you. On behalf of the Ridgeview Alumni Association, thanks for coming and sharing your story. You special. Okay? All right.